Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
Joe, do you know people put cicadas in chocolate? You told me to save it for the show. I held it as long as I could.
Yeah, she saved it for the show and then spent it immediately.
That was some real restraint, Joan.
I approve her decision. I'm sitting here like...
I did my okayest.
It is a party cast. Chris and Purnell are here. How are you two doing?
I'm tired, exhausted, burned out. I went traveling, came back late last night. And then, when I got back in, I stayed up later than I should have, woke up, and then told myself I have to get back to exercising, and despite not really planning for it. So, I'm running on fumes today.
Nice.
And I tried to do a leg press. Like, I was suggested to do 500 pounds. That's why I should try to push. And that's not easy. It's not going to be easy. I don't know if I'm ever going to fucking do it.
Fucking yeah!
So you don't think you could ever do it? There was a time in my life where I did
800 pounds?
Leg press, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Look, y'all see, I'm fat.
You want to know what's as crazy as that? The fact that Carnage just subbed for his 11th month.
It's not nearly as crazy as Cole kicking 800 pounds. Don't you change the subject.
I did, though. No, I used to do a lot of hiking and kickboxing and all kinds of shit. And I wasn't always a broken mess that couldn't walk to the bathroom without a cane.
Oh, you were a broken mess who could kick someone's ass.
Yeah.
Even thinking that. It was more along the lines of it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, I used to hike a lot, do like jujitsu or wherever it is.
No, my bitch ass was strong. Like, I was
pressed on the leg press because that's fun.
I was strunk, as they say. No, like, yeah. Yeah, leg pressing was my shit. I was good at it and I could
feel strong swelling.
And then now I can't take two steps without breaking a leg. So
maybe the secret is more hiking.
Yeah. I got so mad when I did break my leg, and that fucking doctor who didn't know that I used to hike before I got diagnosed with rheumatoid disease, he was just like making a smart ass remark because I was fat and sitting there with a broke leg, right? And he was like, we'll have you back on the trail hiking in no time. You'll be climbing mountains. And I was like, man, fuck you, because I actually used to do that. Nah. And I can't anymore. Like, he didn't even know. He was just being a smart ass, and it really pissed me off. And I never went back to him.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. Now, I was about to say, wait a minute, maybe he was just trying to cheer you up, but if he just made it up.
Yeah, no, he didn't even know. Like, it was only like the second time I'd ever even seen him.
That does lead me to wonder, like, what should he technically kind of said? Like, you'll be back to going places no time. That doesn't sound as engaging, though. Yeah. Or
speaking of going places, Purnell, you said you went on a trip. I'm going to try getting in all of the topics that we brought up as quick as we can. And hopefully, oh God, Coltrane just slipped on the chair and clawed me in the leg. So that felt great. Purnell, where was your trip?
I went to Chicago. Group of friends decided to do we called it Reunion Con, which is essentially a thing that anime goobers call everything con. And I am amongst them, so that's not an insult. The idea was that, you know, COVID is not over. Let's just get out the way right the fuck now. It's still going. People still deal with it. However, but the idea of actually trusting in this actually doing a fraction of what we're hoping, we were like, well, maybe we should try to, you know, get together all vaccinated people and just engage and just be like, hey, we haven't seen each other in a long time. Let's meet up. So we all met at a park out in Chicago area and just kind of had a good day together. And of course, I got there early, so I spent a couple of days, you know, just kind of lounging around like a hotel, like the hotel courtyard, talking about stuff here and there, and drank way too much. Because as you know, as you remember from that previous episode, I gave up most of the alcohol drinking aside from when I'm not home. So fun fact, if you go from not drinking for like 8 months to drinking like you're a con party boy in the age of 40. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
It rocks.
Something that is good, Root Beer is my jam sub for 25th month. That is a lot of months.
That's a lot of root beer.
That is a lot of root beer.
That's a lot of is.
No, that didn't work.
It totally landed. You guys just aren't funny anymore. You're not funny anymore.
Cole, cicadas and chocolate. What the hell?
Y'all didn't see that, though?
No, like, I didn't.
The cicadas were, like, doing their cicada thing that they do every 17 years. Thing. Then, like, coming out of the ground to fuck, people were like, how can we eat them? And so they were, like, roasting them, and they were putting them in pasta dishes. And then some people were, like, full-on coating them in chocolate. I saw some, like, fancy restaurateurs who were, like, making little chocolate discs with the cicada on top, because, of course, you want to see that you're eating a cicada. It's no fun if it might not actually be a cicada inside the chocolate.
Can't just let these bugs have a good time.
Yeah, they just, you know, we had to eat them, because it's what we do. Like, we either, when an opportunity arises to interact with a new animal, humans try a variety of different ways of interacting with said animal, and the number one way is not suitable to talk about, but the second one's eating it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Not suitable to talk about. They have
something. See, I wasn't going to go there, but Purnell just couldn't leave it be.
Purnell's got to talk about cicada fucking.
The ones that have somehow think people out here is banging cicadas. I don't know what world you guys come from, but
people
where
aren't banging
damn
cicadas.
Them wings.
They are
how
100
big are these things.
They're
not
they're
that
like
big.
3 inches or so, maybe 4-ish.
Like
not that big. You gotta
there are tons of people. Like, you know, people already eat ants, they already eat caterpillars and all kinds of random bugs by dipping them in something and frying them. So the idea of eating a cicada, while it may be like, oh, that's gross, if anything, that just seemed like the natural progression to me. Like, yeah, they're going to try to eat the damn things. I mean, they're there, they exist, they're not domesticated, so yes, they're going to try to eat them. That's
lobsters
just the
lobsters of the dirt.
Lobsters of the dirt.
Dirtsters.
Oh my god. Seriously, I can't believe that people, well, I can believe it. It's just depressing that people eat cicadas.
Why would it be depressed though, as opposed to just like weird?
Oh, I have to even like confess that this was the ones putting them on the chocolate disc. The reason I was so aware of this was because it was from a Cincinnati restaurant, so it's kind of in my area-ish within god. That. Within
did
that,
you go?
You know, no, fuck no. Hell no. Listen, I looked at the map of where the cicadas was going to be, and I saw it wasn't here, and I went, whew, and called it a day. That was the end of my experience with the cicadas.
Those poor cicadas, they ain't asked for that. They just want to be respected and cooked.
Oh, they I don't know, man.
Oh, my Lord. I got a new headset this week.
Yeah, because yours broke like a motherfucker.
Yeah, mine broke. It snapped in half. I had a PS4 gold headset. I've had that for a long time. The most amazing thing was, like, I've had it hooked up to my computer wired for years. Like, literal, like, 2 years now. It like, still held a charge. I plugged it in my PS5. And it because I found the dongle for it and it still held a charge and worked. So it was strong up until its final days, but the band on the top snapped and I ended up replacing it with the PS5 3D Pulse headset. So I got another wireless headset to use as a wired headset on my PC.
General question, unless you never use it for said thing. Do you know if the PS4 headset worked with the PS5 though?
Yeah, it did.
That's good to hear because lame factoid. I actually have a PS4 headset like that, but I've never used it. I've had it for, I don't even know how
color
long.
Color me surprised.
I know you're totally shocked. Totally shocked.
Totally floored.
Floored.
Totally.
Totally floored. But like, I mean, I admittedly, in my defense, which is a hard thing to nail here, I only really bought it because at the time I had a friend who worked for the company, so the discount was very steep. And I was like, you know, for the discount I'm getting here, what if I want to use it? It would be worth having. I'll be glad to have it. You know, like, I was thinking about it more like it's just worth having as a just in case at this point. But then just in case never came because I play games alone for some reason. Like, mm-hmm. It's not even a forced thing. I just almost damn near choose to.
It's not even like that I use them for talking to people. Like, I have no intention of actually talking to people. Oh my God. Every time you send an image, I hear a bloop bloop.
But they're important images.
No, they are not. Are they cicadas?
Maybe.
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to have to use one of them as the show image, aren't I?
Maybe.
Oh, Jesus. Make a collage. That's your job for the week. Make a collage for me to use as the friggin' stupid image for the friggin'.
It's not even just the shells, really. So if anything, you're just adding some crunch flakes to your burrito.
No, those are the whole ass bugs.
Oh, even better. That means you get some juicy flakes for the burrito. Delicious juice. Oh,
let's stop talking about cicadas. Jesus, it's gross.
A blizzard.
God damn it.
Rita's water ice cicada blend.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Mayo chop cicada mix.
Fried cicadas and mayo chop. No, I have a feeling so if you're doing fried cicadas, you're using Cranch.
I hear they are crunchy.
Crunchy.
In a related story, I got food poisoning.
Oh, nice. From cicadas?
No. But now it's kind of like, well, I should have gone out that way, I guess.
Where'd you get it from?
Just some normal ass chicken wings.
They undercooked.
You really got the short end of that stick.
I don't. There's actually. It didn't seem like there's anything off about them. They were actually quite delicious. But then,
delicious.
But then,
were they magically delicious though?
I mean, as chicken wings are, yeah. But well, then, that turned into an awful scene.
So,
my neighbors are setting off fireworks. So if any bangs come through,
it's July 6th.
I know.
Surprise, you're going to be doing that for the next 2 weeks.
It's fucking Tuesday, people. You don't need to set off fireworks anymore.
Next 2 weeks.
You didn't need to set off fireworks in the first place.
2 weeks.
Whatever.
I'm just going to say 2 weeks. It's just the thing.
Although it is funny because like people will complain about people shooting off fireworks, you know, before and after July 4th. But then they're like, as soon as it's March, it's Halloween. Ha ha ha. Well,
I am 100% that person.
I know. Most people are.
Like, what the hell does that even mean? Like,
pumpkin spice, you say? Bring it on, motherfucker. I don't care if it's 109 degrees like it was last week.
So where do you get pumpkins? Are you going out in costumes? Do you have a basket out? Take one. The kids on July 7th. Take one piece of candy.
No.
That's the people on my timeline that have me believe.
You gotta start watching The Nightmare Before Christmas. You gotta start planning your costume. You gotta start planning what's gonna be in candy buckets and
costume planning could have happened any time of the year, especially if you got some elaborate shit going on. You're just like, I better plan in January. I don't know.
Listen, my sister has purchased the girls' Halloween costumes that far in advance in the past.
It makes sense. It's like you get it on discount. They're like, stores will have old stuff that they can't move. And it's just sitting on their shelves, so you get it on deep, deep discount.
Well, usually she orders, like, custom-made, really elaborate costumes. Like, one year, number one was Evie Fry from Assassin's Creed. And, like, so she orders, like, bit by bit, she'll get, you know, parts of the costume over the course of the year.
Okay, so that makes sense. That's easier for the costume creator, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's tie these two ideas together. If you got chocolate covered cicadas as a Halloween candy, do you think that would be well received or not well received?
I don't think those would go over too well.
No.
See what they were.
And yet, it's the perfect Halloween treat.
It would be equal part trick and treat.
Yeah.
Some chocolate bugs, but you don't specify anything. And they'll go, ooh, that's funny. Gross things because Halloween's like, no, I actually was serious. These are bugs, but you don't. let them eat it.
You don't these are tell bugs them
someone randomly decided are okay to eat.
And I bet they go over well, too. Be like, they won't know. All they're going to know is they're biting into with candy with a Halloween theme.
I'm crunchy.
You're going to end up on the local news like the one person who ever lost their shaving razor in a apple.
Yeah, that didn't ever actually happen. It was just a dude that was trying to get insurance money on his kid.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That
yeah. It's and ridiculous. Then, like, people are like, watch out for razor blades and candy. And I always wonder, like, when people are like, oh, there's, you know, you gotta watch out for unwrapped candy. People will put dope and stuff in it. And you're like, who the fuck is trying to get rid of their stash like that?
Yeah, no one is giving away drugs. So that shit is expensive. Too expensive. Seriously.
Yeah. My chocolate.
Really? Without even telling the person.
Like, they usually sell it. But then again, I will go this. I can, the one thing I can give, like, people will say, who's giving away drugs? I mean, people pay for it. We all were saying just then. However, you underestimate people who just like to say, fuck you, and just do it because they like the idea of someone being like, whoa, I feel weird, man. I didn't expect that to happen. Like, wouldn't it be cool if some kid ate a Snickers and then got high off of it? He doesn't know. So he's like, what's happening?
Let's elaborately, like, plan and execute this instead of just thinking about it.
Yes, people do that. People do that. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not going to go so far to say that I've seen it. I've never eaten a Snickers bar that stealthily had freaking weed in it. But I can't say I would not put it past a human being to go, man, that'd be funny. And I'm not really hurting for money right now. So I'll just put some weed I had in this candy.
How would you even put weed in a Snickers bar to the point where it would be enjoyable?
It doesn't have to be enjoyable.
And still recognizable for what it is.
Have yeah, you like you can't, like, ooh, dried leaf is in here. Like, no.
Shout outs to the FBI agent who's listening right now. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
It accentuates the flavor.
Hey, someone might listen.
Yeah, our FBI agents.
They're always listening. Whether they're enjoying it is another story.
Ruby said they used to give out beers to cool parents. There's a house on the route that we take our kids to, and like they set up a big grill station, and they have just cans of pops and coolers, and they hand you a hot dog, and yeah, they're great. Don't have any idea who they are, but their food's good. I had better luck with that than Chris did eating chicken wings, as far as the risk of food poisoning goes.
So. Yeah, food poisoning is always random.
It's not to like. That's all I got to say. Food poisoning is the best poisoning.
Is it?
Well, I mean, it's the one you're most likely to recover from.
It's like the other kinds of poisonings. Do you really want those? If you had to get one, you'd probably prefer the food.
Mind poisoning from playing too many video games.
Yeah.
That ain't mine. That's mind. That's mind evolving.
Mind poisoning.
That's evolving the mind. But, like, it's just, I don't know. Like, for me, if I'm going to have to get poisoned from something, I'd rather it be something that tasted good initially. And it just made me puke a little while.
You know what tastes good?
Chocolate?
Good, okay. The brand new SML Wet Pancakes Lip Balm.
Oh, boy.
Is it actually flavored?
Yes, it's pancake flavored.
I didn't think it would be flavored. I just
why wouldn't it be?
I don't know, because you got to figure out how to get the pancakes in there. How do people even...
The same way you put the weed in the Snickers bar.
Yes. You use a syringe and you put maple syrup directly into standard chapstick. Then you put a new label on it and perfect.
Now we're talking. See,
I mean, pancakes originate as a powder anyway.
But why would they waste good maple syrup on lip balm when they could just, you know, eat the maple syrup themselves? I don't understand.
Pancakes are like 10 for a dollar. Lip balm's like $5 a stick.
I would just keep going with the theme. Come on, Chris. You got to go with me.
Say you profit more off of putting a little dab of maple syrup in lip balm.
True.
I'm not an economics guy, but this is like the one thing I know.
And you're right about chapstick being about $5 a stick. People are asking how they can get it, and that's how you can get it. $5 a stick. Shoot an email to the smlpodcast@gmail.com. And give me your info. $5 for a stick, or you could get 3 for $10. That's shipped. There so
delicious.
I'm not really making any kind of money on this. I just thought it would be really cool to have and give out to people. And if people are really interested in getting a little keepsake, shoot us an email.
Or if you have ridiculously chapped lips and you need to take care of that shit. There you go.
You have dry lips. Good way to do it.
And it's legitimately good lip balm. It's made by Bunnies and Cream. They're based out of I think Baltimore.
How they get the
Baltimore? They shave them and then grind them up.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
That's economical.
Yeah. No, I've bought their stuff at MagFest for years, and on a whim, I'm just like, hey, do you guys do custom labels?
We do custom lip balm, yes.
So we have Wet Pancakes flavored lip balm with George's face on it, and you can buy it.
Root beer's right. We need a George commercial for the lip balm.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to him and see if he could whip something up. He's going to be busy. He's got to whip something up for SML 700, which is around the corner.
Just have 600?
We're almost at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah. Did you need to incorporate the Flavor type joke in there somewhere, too. Welcome to Flavor type.
Our town. Oh, man. Should we get to reviews? We only have a couple of games to talk about tonight. We could blaze through these pretty quick if you guys want. What do you think?
Sure. Sure.
We could have done it quicker if we hadn't been talking about cicadas fucking.
Yeah.
But someone has to do it.
Priorities.
First game to talk about tonight is called Scarlet Nexus, developed and published by Bandai Namco, released June 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Steam for $59.99. Choose between two elite psionics, each armed with a talent and psychokinesis and their own reason to fight. Complete both of their stories to unlock all the mysteries of a brainpunk future caught between technology and psychic abilities. Purnell, tell us about your time spent with Scarlet Nexus.
Okay, so this game is actually, like, so Bandai Namco is a company that does a lot of, like, animu-type games like this. So it's almost par for the course, like, at first glance, that, okay, this is going to be the usual spiel, you know, characters filling anime tropes, you know, blah, 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 you know, typical plot line that falls within a narrative, like, of an anime narrative. But I feel like with this game, they actually did a pretty cool job of, like, putting together, like, an action combat system, which is what they're pretty much driving on with this game. But it also follows a pretty deep narrative, too, to go along with it. So it's like you're playing a show that did all the work for, like, getting, like, you know, building relations between the characters and all that. But then they give you this cool-ass combat system. What the fuck am I talking about? Well, this game takes place in a world where there's, like, these monsters or these otherworld invaders called the Others that are being defended against by a group called pretty much like the OSF. And they're done. These people, these OSF members, are all people that were gifted with a specific type of, like, kinesis, like psychokinesis, pyrokinesis, electrokinesis, more kineses than I ever knew could exist. They might not. They could have been made up for this game. I don't freaking know. But the point is, a lot of kineses, and these young individuals all seem to have some sort of it. They get drafted into this military group where they will work together to combat this otherworldly threat. Of course, there's something going on behind the scenes, too, so, you know, get ready for that. Now, as you play the game, in the beginning, you have to choose between two characters. I chose Kasane Randall as my primary go-to character because, you know, girl character. But also, she fights with telekinesis, psychokinesis, manipulating daggers. So I liked her fighting style the best, whereas the other characters mainly focus on, like, melee sword combat with a light telecom psychokinesis ability. So what ends up happening is when you're going through the game, you fulfill missions for this company, this OSF company or organization. And when you take on a mission, you get the opportunity to run around the city that the game takes place in, talking to characters, picking up side quest options if you want to embark on those, which usually yield rewards, whether they be monetary, cosmetic, or equipment-based. You can talk to just other characters to get, you know, more flavor text for the game and the world you're in. Or you can then go to the world map and traverse to one of the various environments as you unlock them. That's where the majority of the combat will take place. And the combat is freaking swank. There is a melee button, a special attack button, and you generally do like a combination of those two things to get your action on. So, for example, the general main combat structure that you get with Kasane is the square button to perform like a trio to quadruple string of attacks. And then you can hit the triangle button as a special attack to kind of stab and dash back. Now, there are some perks to this. One, because her special ability, psychokinesis, drains a gauge. And I'll talk about psychokinesis in a second. But that drains a gauge as you use it. But when you use that special attack along with the melee attacks, you will gain energy back to your psychokinesis gauge, which allows you to use it more often. Then you will utilize psychokinesis as another attack ability, which is essentially finding a bunch of objects littered about the map. There's stuff all over the place because this place is post-apocalyptic, you know, trash town. You'll use psychokinesis to pick up objects and fling it at enemies. Some objects are picked up with R2. Those are basic drops. But L2 are special launchers where when you use them, you get a command that lets you do a special attack that usually deals more damage or inflicts a status like wet or burn or whatever. So now, beyond that, you also get party members into your team over time. And when party members join you, they kind of fight side by side. You can give them like battle, you know, behavior commands. But in addition to that, you are able to tie into their kinesis abilities to bolster your own. So, for example, there might be a guy that allows you to use like some form of kinesis that lets you harden your body. Because again, that's real. That's a real form of kinesis. You will harden your body to allow you to take more damage. There might be another guy that allows you to like, you know, charge up objects with fire so that when you hit them with a freaking like dumpster, it's a fire dumpster. And now you're inflicting burn status and hitting guys that are weak to fire. And as you bond with these characters, either through combat or by giving them presents, because, hey, Persona, no, I know it's not, I guess they don't own the rights to this, but I had to make the joke. They allow you to build up bonds with these characters, see story scenes that aren't always light and fluffy. Sometimes there are story scenes that might not, they'll deepen their bond, but not necessarily in a way that makes them like close friends or something. But as you expand, you used to go along and deepen these bonds, you'll gain new abilities and buffs related to those like perks. And the last thing as far as like general character building, and of course my favorite, because you know me importing stuff, is there's a brain map. Brain map allows you to spend skills that you gain or points that you gain as you level up on a tree of abilities, ranging from anything from like allow you to equip more like, you know, like armed, what this game's form of armor is like plugins, equipping more stuff to extending your attack commands to, you know, like just enhancing base stat abilities, like, you know, plus 5% more damage to a psycho attack, or now you have a ground slam attack. So a lot of different things that open up and they expand as you play the game, which is kind of cool. So don't go into the game seeing the brain map and thinking, well, I can max this out pretty damn quickly, because no, it will expand as the game opens up. So you will get new abilities you can purchase as well. I honestly find the game to be pretty solid. Like the voice work is done very well. The story scenes are generally done with like a comic book style where like they'll slash, they'll drop panels and they'll kind of slide the panels around while the characters are talking. It's very entertaining and engaging. I'm sure some people might look at this and go, I'm playing a PS5 game. Why is it all animated? And there are scenes that aren't animated, but I am a sucker for like artsy styles of presentation, particularly the comic book style when done well, or the panel style. And I think this game does that fairly well. Combat seems simple at first, and I wouldn't go so far to say it becomes complicated, but there is enough to it that you will need to adjust and grow with it, especially if you step away from the game and come back after a while. But thankfully, there is a pretty decent library that's available in the main menu or the, you know, pause menu that lets you review all the stuff they teach you about combat and gauges and, like, you know, your super meter, which is basically take a lot of hits and now you're like kind of like jacked up and you're speedier and doing more damage for a short period of time. All these things. It kind of gives you a bit of a, you know, an info dump when you need it. In the end, because I know you're probably like, Perno, wrap this shit up.
No, I'm interested in hearing it. I dropped the money on this one, but I haven't played it yet. I haven't had the time for it. So I'm eager to hear that you're really enjoying it.
Yeah. If there was only one gripe I had about it, it's kind of par for the course with these kinds of games, or like many games as of now, which is that combat's fun, interacting is fun, but you know, when you go to a dungeon environment, much of the time it's going to be corridor, open room, fight some dudes. You know, corridor, though there will be a stairwell, there might be some stairs going up and down. There's a lot of like narrow environments that lead to rooms. But you also do occasionally come across environments that at least seem more open. Even if you really look at the map, it really is just like a big rectangle instead of a big square. But at least from a visual perspective, it stands out as being a little more different. But I just wish a lot of these kinds of games would, I don't know how they would even do it, mind you. So don't quote me. Maybe have like, actually, I do know. Fuck that. I wish they would go a little bit out of the way to like get a little more diverse on some of the environments you traverse. So it doesn't always just feel like you're running down corridors to the next arena to do battle, you know?
No.
But I mean, I get it. They're working on all the stuff they're more focused on, in a sense, just the conduit to get to the next battle isn't such a big deal to them in that sense. So I don't know. But if someone's listening and they're like, you know, this guy might be onto something, let's come up with some sort of scenario, such as like, you know, multi-tier battle zones and stuff like that. That would be pretty nifty. Maybe a character who can diffuse in the water and sink through the floor and they're in another zone. Whatever. We could talk.
Maybe in the sequel to Scarlet 2 Nexus.
It's all about family. Which this game actually does have a family motif, so boom.
Oh, $60 on Scarlet Nexus. Is it worth it for the family?
I would say that it is, and it isn't even $70, so all the more reason why it's worth it.
Cool. Works for me.
Do you know what else is cool? This what? Frozen Wild Freeze, which I really wish I took out of the freezer sooner.
The Cicada Freeze?
It is now. Let me go get some shells in my next break.
Some mayo chup.
No, let's not go nuts. Let's not go nuts. Let's stick with the cicadas.
Well, if there's anywhere that we're going to find this kind of delicacies, it would be in the next game, which is called Food Truck Arena, developed by Catastrophe Games and Gaming Factory, published by Ultimate Games, released July 2nd on the Switch for $15.99. Become one of the legendary chefs, take part in an unforgettable tournament, battle against formidable opponents, and climb to the top of the culinary world. Join the colorful cast of food truck owners who, using their eccentric cars, quirky recipes, and love for food, try to change the stagnant world of gourmet cuisine one meatball at a time. Chris, tell us about your time with Food Truck Arena.
It wasn't really like that. Okay, so Food Truck Arena is not a cooking game. It has nothing to do with recipes or...
Which is why Cole's not reviewing it, by the way.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't have anything with ingredients or cooking or, you know, doing anything like that. It's literally a kind of top-down view version of something like Rocket League, where you are driving vehicles and trying to push a tomato into the other person's like side of the board. So it's sorry. So yeah, you basically select your vehicle, and each one has a character and a story that is just kind of there. I always like to give games props, though, that the initial starting cast of four characters, and there's four unlockables, but the four characters that are unlocked initially have no white men among them. So anytime that happens in a game, I like to point it out. Good on you. But yeah, they're different people from different countries, a guy from France, a guy from Japan, a lady from Mexico, a lady from India. And, you know, the story and lore describes like the kind of foods they cook and stuff like that and what their story is. And those get unlocked through playing the tournament mode, which is how you unlock the other characters. Each one has like a character they run into that once you beat that character, they're unlocked. And of course, one of the one representing the U.S. is like this is a white dude. And he's like this big trucker guy with a big beard. Oh, and so, you know,
I see a picture of him in the trailer.
Yeah, he's on the actual like icon for the game, too. So which is interesting that you can't play as him initially. But anyways, but the actual gameplay, once it gets to it, it has, you know, eventually eight characters and five different stages. And at least I don't know that you can unlock any other stages. It seems like it's only five. And they drop it gigantic, and I mean gigantic. Like, if these are real size food trailers, and it's a 20-foot long tomato that gets in the middle of the course, and you basically have to push it into the other side, you know, soccer style. Or, you know, people will recognize this very much as, like, kind of Rocket League adjacent. So then that, you know, where that comes in is, like, basically the difficulty is in steering your truck, of course, because it's a top-heavy food truck. And you have one shoulder button assigned to reverse, one to accelerate. And you have two different ways that you can choose to have the stick control your character. One is relative to where the vehicle is. So, you know, if you push the stick left, it always is going to turn your wheels left, no matter how, you know, what position you're in. And then there's a second, much more confusing global position thing that, like, just kind of tries to steer the car in whatever direction you're pushing on the stick. I couldn't get used to that, so I didn't use it. But it's okay. It's once you get used to it, it's not so bad. But even on easy mode, the competition is pretty fierce. And yeah, it's in tournament mode, it basically is a 2 out of 3 kind of thing, and then you move on, and you know, you get some story, and then you know, fight against different characters and stuff. And then there is a match mode where you set up either a single player or a up to 4-player multiplayer. Like a single match, and you decide on the rules, the amount of points, whatnot. And the interesting thing about that is that, you know, the only way that you can play this game multiplayer is through the single match system. So you can't tag team with somebody to do the tournament mode. Therefore, you can only, even though this very, very much seems like a game geared towards multiplayer, you know, pandemonium, you can't unlock any characters unless you play all the way through in single player tournament mode, you know? Uh-huh. So that's interesting. And yeah, like, I do kind of like the unique tools, unique that everybody gets. Like your French guy gets freeze, where he can shoot a freeze ray that freezes everybody for a couple of seconds if it hits them. And, that's always fun to use. So if they get too close to that tomato, you can, you know, turn them into a block of ice. Rio, the guy from Japan, has speed, so he can, like, boost, which is very handy for, you know, kind of getting that tomato out of the corner that it's inevitably going to end up in as you're trying to fight over it. Marisol, the ex luchadora from Mexico, has tongs that come out of her food truck that has a sombrero on top of it. And with that, you can, like, kind of push the tomato without having to run into it directly. And then, of course, Tanvi has the most annoying one, where she, at least if you're playing with other people, I think the computer kind of has it figured out, but if you use her superpower, then it causes everybody's controls to be reversed for few seconds.
I hate that.
So it's a pretty cool concept. I think the whole food truck part of the arena is really just there to be like, this is something a little different, and here's why. You know, the food thing doesn't enter into it. Like, it's funny because, like, you know, when you lose a match, it's like the audience hated your dish, or like the audience loved your dish if you win. And I'm like, what? That isn't at all what I was. Yeah, I was pushing a tomato into a wall. Like, I mean, that is probably one delicious step above putting chocolate on cicadas, but, you know.
Let's not go back there. $15.99.
Crunch, crunch, crunch.
$15.99 on crunch. Food Truck Arena. What do you think of it, Chris?
$16. I got to give it a try. If it's $10 or less, I'd say definitely worth checking out with some friends. It's definitely a kind of its best use is definitely as a tournament game for three of your friends, where everybody likes to play games where the vehicles are hard to control and try to push, you know, a thing into another thing. I mean, there is an audience for it. But yeah, I just didn't see much. I didn't really see enough content, to really say that 16's a buy it, but you know, it might be somebody's taste.
See what you did there.
Hell yeah.
All right, next game is The Procession to Calvary, developed by Joe Richardson and Nephilim Game Studios, published by Digirati, released July 2nd on Xbox One and Switch for $14.99. Huzzah, the holy war is over, your oppressors have been vanquished, the churches of the old god lay in ruin, and thousands of innocent people have been murdered. But it's not all good news. The tyrant Heavenly Peter has escaped your clutches, and you have been tasked with finding him. Cole, what is this game?
This game is absolute chaos, but let me back up for a second, because I have one major gripe I want to approach before I start the rest of the review.
Okay.
This is a sequel, and the first one is not on Xbox.
Oh.
I was so fucking confused, because this picks up right after the one before it. I can't remember the name of it right now. That's where I'm at. But it picks up almost pretty much at the end, and it's even kind of spoilery for the first to talk about the beginning of this one. But ultimately, there's a holy war between Immortal John and Heavenly Peter. And if that doesn't tell you that this is one of the most sacrilegious games you will ever have the pleasure of loading onto your console, let me do that for you now. If you are offended by Christianity being the butt of a joke, steer clear. This game is not for you. For the rest of us, this is a delightful Monty Python type kind of romp in a point and click that is told through Renaissance art. Every scene is a literal oil painting down to the cracks and creases that has been scanned in and used to create the scenery. So you start in the game with your heroine. I cannot say heroine without it sounding like heroin.
Oh, I know. But I'm the same way.
There's no way. But your female warrior.
Heroine.
Yeah, that.
Heroine.
Your Hermione.
There you go.
And if there's anything you need to know about the way this game is going to go, immediately behind her while she's having a conversation with the king some dude of some authority on the battlefield, is literally a scene of death cutting the head off of a cadaver, but animated.
Nice.
For fun. I don't know if I'm doing a good job describing this, but everything, like, I can see the mental images of these scenes in my head while I'm talking about them, and I'm just giggling because they're so outlandish. You have to go look it up because I can't do it justice.
The important thing to note is that the game has a crazy sense of humor. I like in their features, they mention
no punches.
Optional murder. Kill anyone who stands in your way and skip puzzles you don't like. But be warned, your actions might come back to haunt you.
So the whole point is that now that the war is over and has been won, there's no need for murder anymore. But your character loves murder. It's her favorite thing. And now it's been taken away from her. But they tell her, Immortal John, when she goes to speak with him, is like, hey, dude, why can't I murder anymore? Then Immortal John says, okay, well, I kind of lied and I didn't kill Heavenly Peter. I won, but I didn't kill him. He got away. And he says, I'll make you a deal. I'll forgo the no more murder rule if you go kill Heavenly Peter. So your whole point and click quest is to just solve all these different puzzles and get through them. Ideally, you should do it without murder. You've only been told you can murder once, and murdering may result in situations that are less than ideal. But also, you get struck by lightning every time you did it. I did it a couple times just for the jokes. I got a really give the developer a hand here, because the game's like, hey, remember every time I tried to murder somebody, it would be like, hey, remember, you're not supposed to do that. So if you really want to do that, save your game first and then murder. That way you could go back to your game pre-murder and not be punished for it.
Love it.
I have to give them credit for like breaking the fourth wall and being like, but go ahead. So that was a lot of fun. The humor, for the most part, most of the jokes land. There's a few odd ones. There's always going to be one or two that kind of falls flat, right? But for the most part, I'm not even somebody who like enjoys potty humor and stuff. And there were still a few where I was just like, okay, I giggled. I confess. Okay. That got me. Confess. Like, I may have like poked the skunk repeatedly to make it fart. Okay. Okay.
I'm proud of you.
It was funny. It was funny to make the fucking skunk fart.
God damn right.
Sometimes you just gotta have a laugh. yeah, the game is not for the faint of heart. I will say that. There's a lot of torture. Even if you're not murdering people, there's like people being spit roasted, not the sexy way.
God.
Oh, you know, over fires and stuff and you know, being crucified. And it was one of those like I loaded it up not thinking anything about it, and within the first couple of scenes, I was like, oh, can't play that with the kids around, and had to shut it down play it later after everybody went to bed.
It's M-rated, so.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking it was that bad. There's definitely a few where I was like, oop. I think the first time I really got thrown off and was like, oh, I should not be playing this with the kids around, was there were men wrestling nude by the boat that I needed to get onto, and like, meh, whatever, right? But there was full on pubic hair between the butt cheeks and stuff. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna turn this off for a while.
Beautiful. Well, the game is
I loved it though.
The game is $15. What do you think of it?
I absolutely think it's a buy it. I think it's great. I also want to point, it is kind of short. I want to point that out. It's only about 3 hours long. But I want to give the developer one more round of applause. They full on published a walkthrough on Steam themselves.
Nice.
Yes, please. More developers should do that. Thank you.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, next game to talk about is called Onorike, developed by Devilish Games, published by Badland Publishing, released June 29th on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $14.99. Dreams are fed by our own desires, and this is what we call until they become real. But have you ever wondered what happens to dreams that never come true? Purnell, what is Onorike?
So Onorike... is a game that for a while I seriously thought was the main character's name, even though they said his actual name multiple times. The character's name is Pietro, by the way. The idea behind this game, this is a 3D, light puzzle platformer, and that's your goal being that you're Pietro, you're in this location within a world called the Orb, known as the Circus. He's there. His memory's kind of hazy. He just kind of exists there day in and day out while the circus is active, being just like wacky people doing circus type things. But there's something about him that's a little off, and that becomes apparent when he finally takes an action that differs from his norm to help a person who then teaches him that there is a place called the Well of Truth that he can access. And by getting there, his dreams and hopes can come true, and he can pretty much, you know, get out of his, leave the place he's been at for so long. Now, the game itself doesn't have a ton going on as far as like abilities go. Like he can run and he can jump, at least early on. I'll get to the other stuff later. So what ends up happening early on is you are running around this environment. And I will say the environment itself has some pretty cool gimmicks to it. Like, running along strips of bacon, which, for the record, after this episode, I'm probably some bacon. and So you're exploring this crazy world with this, your early on base abilities, just running and jumping. So here's where the description of the game starts to get a little bizarre, though. Well, I guess bizarre in the world's concept, but when you really lay it on paper, it's had foundation in other games. So there's a day and night cycle in this game. Because before the adventure started, the logic was that he came to life at night. During the day, he'd do something. And when the next night came, he'd be back, but he wouldn't remember anything because that was how it was laid out. But now that he's free of the circus and is able to explore the world, he is running around in his environment. There are these little white flowers that exist also plentiful in the circus, but not so much outside of the circus, where he has to collect them periodically, because if he goes without one for too long, he disappears. And if he stays disappeared for too long, he dies. And he gets dumped back to what's called a memory stone. Think of a memory stone like a save point, with the side effect being that, again, it's tied to the narrative. Overnight, he can run around and do stuff. But when day comes, if he hasn't found a memory stone to record his progress, he will forget everything he did the previous day. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, what happens when day comes, though? Let's say you find a memory stone. Everything's good. The evening's done and it's daytime. Well, you get transported to a weird field. And this field has a bunch of seeds floating in the air. You press a button, like the jump button, basically, and you can jump into the air and float, like a sort of a glide, and try to collect some of these things. And you have until the sun sets to collect as many as you can before you're thrown back to the other side at night and you're free to roam again. What is the purpose of what I'm talking about, what I'm describing, the things you're collecting in this day world? Well, like I said, the white dots, the white flowers that exist in the circus are what keep you from fading away. But outside the circus, there's not many, if any, at all. Those things you collect during the day in that field are used sort of like a choose your own like save points or choose your own checkpoints. So you put one down, you collect it, and it allows you to become visible again. And you have the amount limited to how many you were able to collect. Also, there's a couple like individual pellets where if you collect 100 of them, they give you a free spore. But I wasn't thinking about that if I could help it. Just hoard seeds. Now, the aforementioned abilities that I mentioned from before. Over the course of the game, you learn a few things like how to – pretty much like a dash move for sure. And also like a sort of – like you can turn invisible intentionally because – well, the invisible part specifically, because there are these enemies on the field called like the devourers of devourers of hope or chaos or something. Can't remember what it was, chaos or hope. But essentially, if they see
you, sound friendly.
They're very friendly. They just want to give you a slashy hug. If they see you, they'll rush you and they'll try to kill you. So one way to avoid them is by going invisible intentionally. However, of course, that does adhere to the rules of the game, which is it costs you. Like every time you use one of these abilities, you'll go invisible immediately, whether it's because you wanted to or otherwise. And you'd better have a thing to spawn or be near one you've already spawned, or else, you're kind of fucked. So that ties into the whole idea of like collecting the seeds. Now, it's interesting that this game sounds really cool at its core. Like it has some cool elements to it. The exploring is great. Everything about it is very Tim Burton-esque and weird. I like the artwork, the music is good. So what are the problems Pernell could have with this game? Well, have a seat. First, though this one's kind of small because it's nestled with a compliment, is that the game has a cool, narrator who kind of tells the story of Onirike, kind of like similar to like a narrator for like a children's storybook. But however, there's two weird things about this. One, depending on the situation you're in, sometimes they'll just repeat a line she's already said over and over again, just because you're kind of stuck in the place. Like, for example, at the very beginning of the game, if you're in the circus and you haven't figured out how to get out yet, she'll just randomly repeat the same line, which is like, for some reason, he always felt like he was different from the other members of the circus. He always felt like he was different from other members of the circus. But the one thing she wouldn't repeat was the dialogue about the guy that needed to specifically interact with in a specific way to trigger an event, which would have helped me to realize, oh, I could probably do that. And that might make him make trigger the next thing for me. So I was kind of annoyed by that. The second thing regarding her dialogue is that she's a narrator. She is speaking, but there are also words showing up on the screen in a form of subtitles for probably for people who can't hear, but for people who can hear, but still see subtitles. Sometimes you kind of get a little confused if the subtitles don't say pretty much exactly what the narrator is saying.
Yeah, there. I noticed there's a lot of times where the subtitles won't match either that or like the subtitles will go quicker than the voice is going. So you have you don't have the proper subtitles on the screen while they're talking. They really needed to put more work into getting the script right and getting the voice to match the script because it throws me off so much when the words don't match the subtitles. It just it fucks with my head.
It got me quite a few times. Like, this is freaking annoying. But if you were to kick those two things aside, or even better, if the people who made the game go in and patch it and, you know, sync it all up, that wouldn't be a big issue. But that, as it is now, is a very big annoyance for me. Addition to that, aside from the dialogue stuff, the platforming itself can also just be kind of rocky and touchy. So there are a number of areas in this game that require what I genuinely would consider to be precision platforming. Not necessarily if you fall, you'll die. But if you fall, you'll lose a bit of progress in the sense that since you're constantly on a clock, whether it be because night's going to day or because you're running out of visibility time, if you screw up a jump while going through a platform section, it feels a little bit more annoying than average because, yeah, you could put some extra seeds around just in case you screw up. But then you kind of ultimately feel like you're wasting some seeds, too. Like, I wanted to only use seeds when I was about to disappear. So I was like, okay, well, good time to use a seed. Now let's keep moving. But if I got to be like, this is the place where I've fallen five times, maybe I should put a seed here. like, there's something a little irksome about that. Like, somebody might be hearing this and going, well, I mean, they give you your own checkpoint thing. You don't have to worry about it. I was like, well, I'm like, yeah, but I feel like this is one of those cases where that should not be the case. I'd prefer tighter controls.
No.
It's less likely for me to screw up a jump, and it's more likely that if I screw up a jump, it's because I screwed up. And the last thing that bugged me about the game, though some people might be happy about this, is that the so-called threats aren't really threats at all. The Devourers of Chaos, if they see you, they will run after you and attack you. However, if you just keep moving, they go into a swipe animation that will always miss you. Like, they are not a threat. You just outrun them, or you'll just outrun the swipe. I've never been hit by one despite being chased by them plenty of times. So I don't know. Maybe a patch that just like shortens their animation so that they legitimately can hit you if they come close to you. But then I'm sure somebody else might be hearing this and going, well, this game's too hard because if they see you're as good as dead. But I don't know. As it is, they're not really a threat, which means I guess you can at least focus on the platforming and item hunting exclusively in that regard to look for those key fragments. But I feel like if you're going to put a threatening enemy in the game, it should at least be actually threatening. So, no. So I guess you're probably with that dejection sound, it sounds like you kind of already have an idea of where I'm leaning with my verdict.
I kind of have an idea where you're going. I didn't really mind the game that much myself. I wasn't like the biggest fan of it, but I didn't hate it either. It's just kind of like a middle of the road game for me personally. But $15, what is your verdict on it?
Honestly, what you described is fairly similar to what I think. Like, I thought I was waffling over the idea of giving it a deny, but to say deny it would have implied that, you know, I just put the game down and straight up said, you know, screw it, I'll do the review with what I got.
No.
But what ended up happening was I still played it. I still was caught in the idea of like, I want to get this pizza completed. You know, I want to run on these sausages. Oh, I want to get the next ability, you know? So like I was engaged and I wanted to see the next thing. It's just those issues are like deep issues for me, which puts them on like, I'll say try it, but it's a low end try it. And if they can work on some of those kinks, it would totally step up. Because it's not unsalvageable, and even what's there has its perks.
Well, can't all be winners, but I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, see, I'm not unfair. I'm just, you know, I'm just that guy in the bushes.
Yeah, that's creepy. One final game to talk about tonight is called Super Destronaut DX2, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattlake Games. Released July 2nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and Steam for $4.99. Super Destronaut DX2 is a retro space shooter with multiple modes. Test your abilities with the challenges or try to beat your high score in the arcade modes. Play against the clock, the more classical three lives, or even with limited bullets to see how many aliens you can destroy. Dodge and shoot enemies to the victory. This time they may not only come from above. Cole and Chris, you both played this. Who wants to start?
I guess I'll go first since Chris is trying not to die over there.
I'm watching footage of Excite Truck.
Oh, Lord.
It's one of my favorite games.
Terrible. So yeah, this is a sequel to an Alien Invaders type of shmup, if you will, where there's little pixel invaders coming onto the screen. You just have to shoot them. It's very simple. It's very neon, and it's a lot of fun. I appreciate that they've added several different modes and ways to play the game. One of the things is, like, there's a bullet mode where you have to actually count your bullets and you only have so many. And if you don't take out a certain percentage of the enemies before you run out of bullets, then you fail and you have to do it again. There's a hardcore mode where enemies are, you know, they move a little faster. They take more hits. There's the classic mode, which is what everybody expects when they're playing an Invaders game. And then, just like that, I forgot what the other mode was. Time trial, where you have so long to take out as many enemies as possible. I appreciate what they were trying to do by having so many different modes. My biggest gripe about that, though, is I wish they'd worried less about the amount of modes they had and more about the enemy cycles. It gets really repetitive the way the enemies enter the screen and move around. And it got to a point where I was just kind of memorizing their movement patterns because it was pretty much on a loop. And as long as you could memorize that loop, the first part of it, you were going to just continually keep blowing them away.
Yeah, they kind of brought the enemies in. Well, they bring them in waves, and the waves are random, but the enemies inside the waves and what they do are not.
Yeah. And there's still only, like, there's only so many movement patterns for them. They're still incredibly predictable. By the time I had the 1K, and that didn't take long, it was like under 30 minutes. By the time I had the 1K, I was like, I could shoot these waves of enemies in my sleep. that's really the only thing that, like, I would have to gripe about as far as this game goes, because I played the first, I enjoyed it, I like the concept, I love the color palettes and how everything's all super bright and flashy and neon. I like the wave. Yeah, I like the element where when you kill an enemy, sometimes it creates a ghost and you can't shoot around that ghost, and you have to watch out because if it hits you, it'll take one of your lives. Like, I like that they brought all that stuff back, and it feels like they kind of wanted to build on it, but I don't know if they just hit a roadblock with the animations and how the enemies are presented or what, but I would have liked it just to mix it up just a little bit more.
Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I, as a fan of the original Super Destronaut, I do like the directions that they're kind of going in. So it is basically that they have all those modes. And when you are playing through the stages, like the arcade mode, I guess you would call it, they kind of have you do five different stages with each one, you know, with a different permutation of like those, you know, time attack or, you know, bullet counting or hardcore kind of rules, but a little easier than if you were to play them in their own modes. And you can just play the modes by themselves. I like that on top of the regular shooting, they have a slow down everything kind of shot. Mm-hmm. That's really, really useful for bullet mode, because then you can just like kind of, you know, slow it down and shoot just one bullet for, you know, each enemy and stuff. It's funny, like, after so many hundreds of thousands of points in the bullet mode, when I was playing it in its own mode, I eventually just had to take a dive because I was tired of playing it.
Yeah. I did that a couple times too. I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I also platinumed on this one. I actually kind of, like what they're going with it. But I do agree with Cole's criticism that there aren't that many enemy waves. So you'll very quickly kind of have them memorized. And then it just kind of feels like, you know, it's sweeping the floor, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the game is only $5. What do you two think?
I say buy it.
Yeah, I'm good with that. For the price, and you know, it's a quick completion, but it's also a fun game, and you're gonna enjoy the little bit of time you do spend with it.
Yeah, you might end up zoning out or something while playing it, but it's very good for $5, just like the first one.
4 a.m. Destronaut works. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it. Woo. Made it through.
We did it.
Short one
somehow.
It could have been shorter, but
it could have been. But no, y'all had to fucking talk about cicadas. Mayo chup.
It was important.
Cranch.
Cranch. Oh my god, we're not calling this episode Cranch Part 2. Oh my god, we're calling this episode Cranch Part 2, aren't we?
I like it.
Only with Boogaloo.
Well, since we had one game that was a sequel, you know, without the first one.
It seems Cranch appropriate. DX2.
Cranch DX2. Nice. So, is Super Destronauts DX2, is that just the sequel to Destronauts, but like a deluxe version? Or is there like a DX1 that's separate from the original Super Destronauts?
I don't know.
I don't know either. And I usually pay attention to these things. Like, they came out with a tank game, too, that I also bought, but I never saw, like... So, I guess it is just...
Super Destronaut DX.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's just...
also $5.
Okay. Maybe that's the one I have.
You just didn't pay attention to the DX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
This is boring to end the show. Does anyone have any final words before we go to music?
I honestly didn't know we were still recording.